Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owl Post for the week is delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, Drea Kaufman.
Hello! I'm saying hello to everyone except 2020.
Yes.
2020 can go suck an egg.
Yes. Yes. I completely agree. Mm-hmm. But we're glad to be back. We know we missed a few weeks. Life has been crazy for both of us. I moved, and Drea has had some things happen in life, and just nothing we could do, honestly. So we're glad to be back with you, and we're really thankful, honestly, that we came back to some really cool things, Drea. We got an email and a review over on Apple Podcasts. That review said, amazing podcast, very entertaining, 5 stars. Lewis Jr. Martinez said, I've been a huge fan of the series, and I've read and listened to the books countless times. Too many, really. And I love the format of the podcast and the fact that it goes chapter by chapter. Such a great discussion of a wonderful series. I also enjoy the contrast of the opinions when discussing different concepts throughout the books. Thank you for making such a wonderful podcast.
Aww. I like when people like when we don't agree. That's my weird, like, I like the people like that, because I like that. I like when we can have different opinions and still get along nicely, like adults.
I think that's one of the hallmarks of a good podcast and good discussion, you know, is to be able to talk about things reasonably, and obviously you're not always going to agree. So we did get a great email from a person named Haley over there in the UK. And I'm not going to read the whole thing because there's some personal things in there and I don't want to share everything she shared. But she did mention that she found us about halfway through the lockdown there in the UK. And she's a psychotherapist at the NHS there in England. And she was looking for something to help her through everything. She'd been watching, you know, TV, she said, rewatching TV shows. She said she needed something she felt like that was less than just more than TV. So she started listening to the Harry Potter books, which were great, of course, but then she wanted something more three-dimensional, so she started searching out podcasts about her favorite things, and she found us and started binging us. She mentioned that she had been binging us all the way to the Order of the Phoenix, and then she had to stop because she wasn't giving us, she said, her full attention. And so she has stopped. She went all the way back to the beginning and has started listening to the chapters along with then the podcast. And she loves listening. She said, I talk to you both, agree with you, disagree with you, laugh with you, get annoyed when you get a British pronunciation wrong or misunderstand British nuances. But ultimately, I love you both being part of my day. And I look forward to listening to you. I have not yet heard any podcasts that you might have recorded during these COVID times. I'm not even sure if you're recording. I hope you are. I've really enjoyed listening to something that's not to do with COVID. And I hope that by the time I get to those episodes, life looks a lot more normal. Thank you. And you know what, Haley? We are still recording. So when you get here, thank you. We really appreciate the fact that you wrote us that email. And we're just glad to be a part of your life and be able to bring a little bit more joy. And you know what? It's great for us to be able to talk about Harry Potter and not COVID too.
I was going to say, we do our best not to talk about COVID because we're both kind of sick of it. Hence the inability to say hello to 2020 right now. That's a big part of it. It's really touching that she wants to give us her full focus before coming back to it and really dedicate. I mean, that's such a methodical and logical approach to things, and I find it very commendable. It takes a lot of self-motivation and organization that I don't always have. So I always really respect when people can keep themselves on a stricter regimen. So, I mean, that's awesome. I'm happy to be a part of your day, and I hope you correct us all the time on how terribly we mispronounce things with my Arizona accent that I didn't even realize was an accent, but someone recently told me is totally an accent. So yeah, I'm so happy for the review and for the email. It always makes me feel good to hear how we're being utilized and the impacts we have. So
yeah, and it's just fun to bring, like, you know, some joy to people's lives. So yeah. And I think, unlike, you know, that's one of the yeah, well, and it's one of the things that I think is so beautiful about, you know, good stories, right, is the ability to bring joy in any circumstance. And so, you know, Harry Potter is definitely one of those, and we're just excited to be celebrating it. So you want to catch up with us, you can, all over the place. We're on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. There's TheNerdParty.com, where you can go to the contact section, and you can also send Drea and I an email. And, of course, you can give us a star rating and review over on Apple Podcasts, and so we'll read it out here on the show. And, of course, you know, don't forget, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts, so you don't have to have an Apple device or use Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and any other podcatcher out there. You'll be able to find Owl Posts. So, Drea, this week we're at a very, it's an interesting chapter because it's kind of a transition chapter, but there is a ton of stuff that happens in this that's going to be really important. And it's chapter 11, The Bribe. And it's very interesting because we start off with the fact that the kids are just kind of in this holding pattern because they need to wait for Creature to get back with Mundungus so they can figure out what's happened to this locket. But they've also been noticing outside the windows that there are Death Eaters out there keeping watch over the house. And we're realizing that obviously they're not coming into the house. So most likely Snape has not been able to tell them how to get into the house because of the protections that have been put on it. But it's... been a little bit crazy, and since the Patronus from Mr. Weasley, they've had no news, so they're kind of going a little bit stir crazy and also driving each other crazy.
Yeah, and I do love that the very first part of this chapter, she makes a parallel to that Harry's like, well, I assumed if he could get out of a lake of in fairy, I'm going to butcher that one for our UK friend, that, you know, he'd be back in a matter of hours with Fletcher, and then it turns into days. I think that they're at about 3 or 4 days by the time he actually reappears at the end of the chapter. And I think that's just, that's the worst, not knowing how long you're waiting. I mean, that's a real life thing we can all relate to. Mm-hmm. Like, not knowing when something is going to end is something we're all living right now, right? And so I think that's really interesting, and it grates on them and each other, and, you know, I think that's true of everyone all the time. They're feeling their own version of, I hate to talk about COVID now, but of COVID, like, sort of self-isolating in this house. They can't go anywhere or do anything. They can't get takeout. I mean, where would I be without Thai food, guys? You all would be miserable. Trust me.
That's actually a good. Yeah, it's very true, because they really can't go anywhere right now because they're afraid of what might happen, and they still don't understand, you know, how Harry was able to be tracked, which we find out in this chapter. So yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. It really does kind of parallel in some ways to what we're going through right now. And they're just getting on each other's nerves, you know? I mean, they don't have anything else to do, and so Hermione does nothing but study the tales of the Beetle Bard, and Ron is playing with the Deluminator, which is annoying both Hermione and Harry, as he's clicking lights on and off, and they're just kind of snapping at each other. And so you get this real sense here at the beginning that this is a really, it's just a very frustrating time for them, and part of that is the fact that there's no action, and they've been forced into inaction, which is Harry's least favorite thing in the world.
And it kind of changes up, though, here as we get into the chapter, because they kind of all draw their wands when somebody does enter the house. They've kind of, I feel like they've kind of been waiting for that moment, right? They've been seeing the Death Eaters outside the house, kind of pacing back and forth. I think they all felt it was just sort of a matter of time before that happened. And they all draw their wands, and it turns out it is not a Death Eater, but it is a friendly, kind of. At least at the beginning, it's a friendly.
Yeah, I mean, it's Remus, and he arrives at the house. They question him. They make him them tell him, you know, who he is and how he knows them, and the only ways that they would know. So they do a good job with that. And luckily, you know, they have the conversation, like I mentioned, about like Harry being tracked. And then he's like, I have no idea how that could happen. It's kind of impossible for him to still have the trace. And so then he gives them a little lowdown on what happened at the wedding. And, you know, after Kingsley's message and the fact that that message really saved him. And, you know, it gave them the opportunity to be able to escape. But not only that, but what I love is that a person that we don't really like very much dies in a way that's quite heroic, actually, because they don't give up the location of Harry Potter. And so Scrimgeour, having died, being tortured to death, basically, doesn't give up the location of Harry. So it's kind of, honestly, pretty beautiful to see somebody that we don't really like. We didn't necessarily like their methods, but in the end, they did the right thing. You know, it seems like for the right reason. So, you know, definitely the way you want to die, right? Like,
sure. That's it. I mean, it was very altruistic of him, right? And it goes back to that. Deep down, his methods and what was happening were not in line with his own, with, you know, Harry's own sort of personal philosophy. But that when it came down to it, you know, he still ultimately did the right thing. And that's hard, right? It's hard given the circumstances you're in when all you want to do is save yourself. But, you know, and to your point about him not knowing, he didn't know Harry was at the wedding. But he knew the last place he saw him, right? He knew the last place he's likely to be, and he didn't give that up. So, you know, it is a nice last act. And it's kind of the first time Harry has someone die for him, and we're not instantly greeted with guilt, right? Because a lot of other times people have sacrificed themselves or put themselves up in dangerous situations. And Harry sort of feels this twang of guilt about that, and that he's not worth that. And it's not that important. And how, you know, and this is sort of that turning point where this is the first time where he doesn't feel that. And it could be that he didn't have quite the relationship with Scrimgeour that he has with some of these other people that have put themselves in peril. But you know, we don't have this section where you're like, oh, Harry felt guilty about his death and, you know, had to be reminded that he's important and I'm not the golden one and all that fun stuff. Like, we didn't have to go through that this time. It was more factual and a matter of, okay, well, he died for me. I guess we're going to keep trudging on. So it's almost like Harry is accepting the idea of Harry is not just him personally, but that sort of image and the mission is now who he is and what people are sacrificing for. And that's, I think, a little bit of an important breakthrough for him. The sort of depersonalization of a lot of this, right? So, you know, that was kind of significant as well.
Yeah, well, I think you're absolutely right. And then on top of that, as we're learning about the fact that, you know, the Death Eaters have taken control of everything, and that was because they've taken control of the Ministry, they were easily able to take down every spell at the Burrow. And we learn just how important this is, and we see how dangerous this is, because they're, of course, now able to use the most brutal spells without any fear of arrest. And they're able to penetrate defensive spells that are being cast, like what we saw that the Burrow had been protected by, because there is no Ministry protection whatsoever anymore.
Not only is there not any Ministry protection, but they've been able to sort of turn the message that it's actually Harry who killed Dumbledore and not a Death Eater. Right. And so they have you know, public eye justification, if you will. It's very, very thin, very thinly veiled. But they still have created and concocted some sort of justification, because we also come to find out that they break through the defenses at Tonk's parents' house, which the last time we'd heard of that, even Voldemort himself couldn't get through those defenses. So now they're able to actually focus their time and energy to take those down. And they tortured her parents. So because they had contact with Harry during the whole escaping Privet Drive. So, you know, it's just there's a lot of change happening and it's very dangerous. And they make a point of showing you how dangerous it is. And when Harry is confronted with this information that he's sort of suspect number one again, he also doesn't react the way he did the last time he was sort of in this situation. Doesn't take it personally. You know, doesn't put a lot of energy towards debunking it, basically threw the paper on the table and was like, well, that's garbage.
Yeah, I mean, this is really interesting because, you know, they're basically accusing him of having something to do with the death of Albus Dumbledore. And the whole point of this is that, you know, if you, with Dumbledore being dead and him the one being the person that had been the most for Harry in the public eye, if they're able to cast light on Harry that he might have had something to do with his death, of course, it just creates doubt where they need it to. And then on top of that, what we see here is that not only are they giving misinformation, but now they are going after science itself by creating their own reality in which they question whether Muggleborns can even be such, there could even be such a thing, and whether or not they had obtained their magic by theft or force. And so now, unless you could prove you have at least one wizarding close relative, it's being determined that you had magically, you had gotten your power, your magical power, by illegal means, and that you need to suffer punishment. And I think what is so fascinating here is that this is what we see anytime that you want to begin to rewrite everything. You first have to control the system, then you control the information, and what we'll see is that you also have to then control the education, which they also have made attending Hogwarts mandatory. So that, of course, they can now begin indoctrinating everybody at a young age and basically turn them into Voldemort youth. And so I think it is just absolutely fascinating the way that she breaks down the disintegration of us as a society in one of the most dangerous ways possible, which is that you allow the system to be taken over, and then you allow the control of information to be taken over. And I mean, like, we're talking about the idea that they're literally making up fake science to prove their point. Like,
they also are questioning not just those who can't trace back to a direct descendant of one of the, like, big wizarding families, but they're sort of questioning those who present, you know, who challenge and present risk. And we'll find later in the book, they use it as a tactic to get people to obey as well, whether they are completely legitimate or not, right? They're using this witch hunt, if you will. It definitely reminds me of the witch hunts, to glean and prune out the wizarding community of those undesirables, not just not magically born, but those magically born that oppose them. And it is, it's just the whole society is breaking down, and it's dangerous, and it's happening quietly, almost like no one wants to talk about it. And it's not a coup in the sense of a, you know, military faction or anything like that. It's just sort of happened and things are changing, and it's scary. It's really scary.
Yeah. And I mean, on top of that, what we see is that it's not, I mean, it, you know, obviously we kind of immediately go to the Salem witch trials type of thing. But this is, I mean, this is exactly what we saw the Nazis do, or the communists in Russia do, which is that, you know, if you have a group of undesirables, that you create a false narrative about them. Then you create even false science, basically, to prove why people shouldn't even look at them as people. And you make them less than, and then you can do whatever you want to them. And it's like, I mean, honestly, we just see this in our world all the time, you know?
Well,
and
at least you can justify whatever is done to them,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And people, but then, you know, people don't feel bad about it, right? Because if you can delegitimize somebody's personhood, then you can do whatever you want to them. So, I mean, and we've seen that all the way from, you know, what we saw in World War II with the Nazis, what you see in Communist Russia, what you see happen in Communist China, what you saw happen in the United States with slavery, and slavery, honestly, slavery around the world in every country, in every place, in every world, in every part of the world. For almost all time, like, that's usually why we can treat slaves in a certain way, you know, like, because we dehumanize them. So, like,
we've made them less than people.
Yep,
their personhood is not as good as someone else's personhood.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Yep. So that's what we're seeing here. And so,
I mean, I think, we did it here in the United States too with the Japanese internment camps, right? Made them less than, and it's still happening today. I mean, it's different, it's evolving, but the same argument, the same tactics are being used, right? The minimalization of someone's worth or well-being is still a commonly used tactic,
yeah,
to justify violent or aggressive behavior. But yeah, I mean, the whole thing is, it's ugly. It's really ugly, and it's disappointing to watch. It's fascinating to watch it happen, and then it's disappointing to think that, like, it's happening in reality too, and what do I do? And it's one of those things where, like, a lot of people don't like to think too hard about it because it hurts your heart, it hurts your soul, it hurts your head, right? It hurts the people you care about. And that's exactly what she's showing happening here to the wizarding world. And Lupin, as sort of an ultimate outcast, I like to think of it, which becomes a huge part of this chapter, him being sort of the ultimate outcast, because not only is he magical from, we don't really know his lineage, but from what I'd presume to be not a super common magical family, but he also had, you know, is not just a wizard, he's a werewolf, which is yet another magical creature that devalues his personhood. You know, and he makes a point of saying that, like, you guys have only known me in the confines of Hogwarts and the Order. And both of those are sort of privileged areas where I get to be treated like a person. You don't truly understand what it's like to be in the wizarding community as a werewolf, you know?
Well, and this is the place to which he's coming from to ask Harry and Ron and Hermione to let him join their quest.
Yep.
Because he feels this weight of that he has kind of thrust this problem upon Tonks and their new baby. And what's fascinating here to me and was to see that in many ways Lupin is allowing everybody else to define what his identity is. And he's believing that, and then passing that on to Tonks and his child, instead of knowing what he is, which is, yes, he's a werewolf, right? But he has the ability to also control that problem, you know, and that control should not, you know, mean that he cannot be seen as a full person, as, you know, somebody like, you know, Voldemort and his followers would say that he is. And so, and honestly, Harry's reaction to this, I remember reading this for the first time and finding it unexpected, but then as I thought more and more about it, it makes perfect sense, because as he gets very angry at Remus for wanting to leave his family, she gives this little side where it says that Harry can see flashes of basically everyone who's died for him, whether it's Sirius, whether it's Dumbledore, whether it's his parents. And he tells Ron and Hermione after Lupin has left that, no parent should leave their child on purpose. And it's very fascinating to see Harry's anger. He gets very angry and he gets very mean to Lupin. But I think his challenge to Lupin is completely 100% valid and right, because I don't think anybody is challenging Lupin. And he doesn't expect, I think, to be challenged here. And I think that's one of the reasons he's kind of so angry at Harry as well, is because he also knows he's right. So it's a very, very angry conversation that they have. But I personally believe that Harry, I don't know how else you handle this. You know, like the kids are kind of like, I don't know if that was the best way to handle this, but I don't really know how else he would learn or grow. Or, I mean, I don't know. What do you think? Because this is really interesting part of the chapter.
I 1000% agree with everything you've said so far. I think I wasn't particular. I was a little taken aback the first time I read it, because, you know, you're not used to Harry being so direct with other adults, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Especially once he's had sort of a parent or a teacher student relationship with. But I think he was absolutely right to call him a coward. I think he knew exactly how to push his buttons. He knew exactly how to challenge him into thinking. I think he needed to get through. I mean, Lupin had, he had justified and rationalized his decision out to the extent that Harry knew until he was irrational, he was never going to break through, right? And doing it in a, he wasn't even doing it in a conscious way, like, oh, he's got a rational argument, I need to break that down. I think he just needed someone to have a very strong gut reaction to him, because I'm sure Tonks has been asking him to come back, and I'm sure others have been telling him not to go, right? But hearing it completely from the outside, super straight and to the point and direct, was really, I think I agree with Harry kind of at the end, like, it doesn't really matter if it was cruel, if it resulted in the right thing, then I'm good with it, right?
Right.
And I think I can relate to that a lot too, because that's sort of, you know, a lot of times what happens to me is I'll say, I would much rather take the responsibility of saying something that was maybe a little insensitive, but if it had the impact it needed to have, then I'm okay with that, right? So I don't think there was a more sensitive way to approach that topic. And I think they both needed to get mad, because I think Lupin's mad. He's mad at the world for treating right. him that way. He's mad at the world. He's mad at Greyback for making him a werewolf. He's mad at the wizarding world for, you know, treating him this way. And he just needed to be mad. I mean, he was right there on the edge already. And it was a totally irresponsible thing to do, to leave his family and try to go off on an adventure where the odds of you dying are very high. And he knew all that, right? Even without knowing what it was. It's something that I think a lot of people, it's a real life thing that mm-hmm. I think so many of us have some connection to, but it's oddly specific, right? And I think Harry was hit not just by the people who have died, but just those who have left him and the impact yeah. it had on him. And if he can stop someone else from having to go through that, he will, right? He mm-hmm. will save this unborn child from having to go through this if he can. So I think, you know, I disagree with Hermione in the scene where she gets uppity and tries to make it stop. I think this needed to happen. It had to happen. Someone had to have words. They were going to happen. I'm glad it was with Lupin and not between like Ron and Hermione or Ron and Harry or something like that. But honestly, I think the fallout of it was my favorite, was Harry acknowledging that Ron and Hermione are having little secret conversations and little, like, we've all done it where you kind of like have eye contact and make gestures and act like you're not talking about the person right in front of you. But I think that it lightens the mood a little bit. But I also think it shows the connection that Hermione and Ron have really built over the last 7 books.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that, you know, what's beautiful here is that Harry does a good job of saying as well, you know, he admits that maybe he didn't necessarily handle this the best way. You know, maybe he shouldn't have called him a coward, but he's acting like one. And, you know, he admits that, you know, this whole thing is about, as long as it gets him to go back to Tonks, that's really all that matters. And, you know, I think his
question about his dad is a good one, too. He
he
didn't quite know if his dad would be proud of him for calling out Lupin, or ashamed of him for yelling at one of his oldest friends. But I think he kind of settles on, it doesn't really matter, I'm good with it.
Yeah, I think that the best part of it for me, and the reason that I think, you know, Harry did the right thing, is that he is the child whose parents left him, not because they chose to leave him, but because they did it to protect him and not run away from the danger, right? And in many ways, Lupin is ashamed of himself in a way that he shouldn't be, and he's running away in a childlike way, you know, in a very teenager kind of way, where like you get hit with the hard thing and you just, your first thing to do is to run, and to kind of leave that situation. And so I think Harry has rightly sussed out that this is not the adult way to handle this, and he calls out his parents I think a good basis for what good parents should do. But he's also seen that in other people too. Sirius did the same thing for him. Dumbledore did the same thing for him. Every adult that he's looked up to really in his life has done this. And I think the reason he's so angry and he says it, you know, I didn't think the man who taught me how to fight Dementors would be a coward. And I think he's really disappointed, actually. This is one of the few times that I think in Harry's life where an adult has really disappointed Harry that he looked up to. And Lupin was one of the few people that Harry really has truly looked up to in his life and kind of seen as a role model, honestly.
Well, and on top of that, not only is he being a coward, but he's using this guise of doing something grand and protecting the kid. He's using these sort of heroic gestures as a justification, and they're empty. And I feel like that's part of why Harry gets so angry, is he's almost making the gestures that others have made for him smaller by saying by putting himself into that same category, right? When instead of admitting that he's afraid and doing this based on fear, he's basically saying, well, no, I'm going to do something good for them. I'm going to protect them.
Right.
You know, and no, that's not what you're doing. Like, that's not what you're doing at all. And I think that's what makes him angry and makes the message that he has so strong, even like it gives it the heat behind it. Right.
Right.
Is that it's offending him and he's lived it. So let me tell you the truth and let me tell it to you by yelling it at you, because you've insulted the memory of all these other people and the life I've had to live. So,
yeah,
you know, I think that's really the anger behind it. And I think that's what he's processing when he leaves, and he kind of calms down and says, like, I shouldn't have called him a coward, but he's being one, right?
Right.
Because I don't think Lupin even, I don't even know that Lupin realizes that what he was doing was, like, to your point, a teenager running away from the thing that's hard, right? He thinks he's doing the right thing, and Harry had to point out, like, no, you're not. You're doing the easy thing. It's not, it doesn't make it the right thing, right?
That's a good point. And what's really interesting too is, you know, so we have the Daily Prophet that has been left, and Harry begins to look at that. There's another article there about Dumbledore, and there's this really tiny thing, but we see a picture of Kendra, his mother. and that Harry thinks that this picture, that she looks kind of like Native American. She has dark eyes. She has high cheekbones. She has this kind of straight nose. And what I loved about this description is that how much I feel like it, like now we know about Ilvermory and the American, especially the American Indians, right? And how the Native Americans here were so into, you know, many of them were witches and wizards. And, you know, we learn about the American wizarding community from the Fantastic Beasts films. This just really spoke to me. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. I wonder if that was one of her, like, thought processes, is like that possibly Kendra is descended from one of these witch or wizarding families in America. That would be really cool to know.
Well, and the Fantastic Beasts series also gives us more theories on his sister, which kind of get played out as we go through this book too a little bit more, not fleshed out entirely, but you know, definitely shed some additional options, I guess, on that family dynamic and the reasoning behind everything, right? But this is just really meant to paint the family in such a negative light, right? It's Rita Skeeter, so set your expectations accordingly. And, you know, it just glosses over some really terrible things, like with what Albus's or what Dumbledore's dad did, and then they moved to Godric Hollow. But it's really speaking to the fact that this daughter or his sister was so mistreated, is the whole kind of point of this passage to put out there. And you know, it is fascinating, and it's also interrupted.
Yeah, because this is when Creature comes back with Mundungus, and we finally find out what happened to the locket. And before we get there, though, I just really love how Creature's like beating Mundungus with a pan, and Harry's like, Creature, no, we need him to be conscious so we can talk to him. His Creature's like, maybe just one more, Master Harry. And Ron just laughs, and Harry's like, you know what? If he needs more persuading, you can do the honors. And I just kind of love this scene because they're kind of slowly winning Creature over a little bit. And it was just so funny. He's just like, one more, please. Just one more.
Well, they've just really found the best way to interact with Creature, right? When he left to go get Mundungus, we had talked about that they need to treat him differently and come up with a different approach. And this is really kind of the first time they're doing that, right? And Harry doing things from a standpoint of, even though they're cool, they seem like kindness to Creature. It's working. It's effective. And to your point, they're winning Creature over, right? And I do love that he grabs the pot and tries to
it's
beat
fantastic.
Mundungus. Especially
it's
because
so
it happened.
Funny.
Doesn't it happen when he says something about the junk in the house? Sirius never cared about this junk.
Yeah.
That's when Creature sort of loses it, because we know how much he cares about this family and all the stuff in the house and everything happening. And then I do like, because this is different from the movie, and we haven't talked much about the movie here, but the Lupin thing doesn't happen in the movie at all. He's totally cut out of this part. But when they're talking about the locket, Hermione's like, oh, he still has it. And it's Ron who steps in and says, no, he's trying to figure out if he should have asked for more money. And it's one of those times where we've talked a few times that Ron doesn't really get his due in the movies. And this is yet another part where Ron puts those pieces together much faster than anybody else, and is able to aptly identify the fact that he did sell it. He just didn't ask for enough money. And the way he describes the recipient of the locket too is very different as well.
Well, and not only that, but the fact that he, poor Mundungus, didn't even get to sell it because this woman comes by with a little bow on her head and takes the locket from
as
him.
A bribe.
So he didn't even make any money in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a little bit of a, you know.
Which is different, because in the movie, I think she buys it from him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's just a little bit of poetic justice. So, you know, I think I really appreciate this chapter, and so much happens in it, which I really love.
But I love, before you wrap up, I love the way he describes who gets it. Because in the movie, they just kind of point to a picture in the prophet. And in the book, they have to describe it. And Harry and Ron and Hermione instantly know who he's describing. When he talks about the lady with the little bow on her head. And the fact that she kind of looks like a toad. And they're all like, oh, crap.
Yeah, I mean, gosh. One of the things I just love, I mean, really, this... It what's so interesting about this book is just how a chapter like this, where it kind of starts off, it seems like slightly mundane, and then so much just ends up happening in it, and I just really appreciate it. And you know, things are going to get rolling now. We have an idea of where the locket is and who has it, and so can't wait to get to chapter 12, Magic is Might. Drea, I did just want to say, I just, as we're recording, I got a message here from somebody in Australia. Their name is Joshua, and they said that they've been listening to our show, and it's been getting them through work. And they've never read the books, but they have watched all the movies. So, one, Joshua, we would say, go ahead and read the books. You're going to love it. But
do the audiobooks. What is it?
Yeah.
There's two
Jim
narrators.
Jim Dale, in the United States did the, and then Stephen Fry for the UK version. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's two different choices there. But thanks so much for listening to us, and we wanted to make sure you got your shout out here on the show. So, and thanks for contacting us and letting us know, because it's always fun that we're so international. We've got a pretty big,
big
cohort
Australian
down there
following.
In Australia.
Yeah.
So
we're popular with the Aussies.
Exactly, which is fantastic. So, hey, Drea, though, if people want to, find you or talk to you or any of those things, where can they?
Sure, you can find me on Twitter at PCFCheck or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, CoffMan.
And you could find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero under the name MattRushing02. On Twitter, our Instagram. Also, make sure you're following the 602 Club, which is my big other podcast doing. We've got brand new handles there for the podcasts themselves, so the 602 Club. You can find me doing the 602 Club podcast on the Trek FM network. I'm also, which is a general geek show where we're talking about all of the fandoms we love. We've talked about all the Harry Potter stuff, but you can find tons of other great content over there, plus doing The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And we also do Literary Treks, which is our books and comics podcast that you can check out as well. And then here on the network, I'm doing Aggressive Negotiations over on the Nerd Party here with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. So, but we want to say thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.